Welcome, Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals, well, mostly professionals, that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, we have, he's back, attorney Anthony Bandero, the founder of Blue the Gold at bluethegold.com, and also former law enforcement as well. So thanks for being back on the show, Anthony. Also, Sheriff Mark Kreider from Walla Walla County in Washington State, former FBI whistleblower as well. So thank you guys so much. We have an interesting lineup. A shout out to our sponsors. You know, our title sponsor, Gulls at Gulls.com. Also, ComplianttechnologiesTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor. We also have GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.live, SafeguardRecruiting.com, our streaming sponsor. And yes, if you need recruits at your agency and you want to hire them the right way where they'll actually stay and you can retain them, SafeguardRecruiting.com is the way to go. And they also are our streaming sponsor, allowing us to stream to over 1 million followers right now during the live show. We also have TwoBells.com. They built their new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. You can get the mug that the Chief's got in his hand right now, or like the shirt that I'm wearing. We got all kinds of cool gear. We don't charge anything extra for it. We don't make a dime off of that stuff, so we're just trying to get our gear out there. So check that out, leoroundtable.com, online store, upper right corner. A shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at tampafp.com. We also have Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com, and Travis Shades with lawofficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make this show happen. And now, what in the world are we going to be talking about today? We've got our very first story. Four Chicago lawyers' exonerations are a cash cow. Now, when I read the title, I had a hard time figuring out. There's a reason why we're starting off with this as our first story, guys. You definitely are going to want to hear this. Also, appeals court rules that Florida's alligator Alcatraz detention site can stay open. This has been like a ping pong ball bouncing back and forth. And it's been going back and forth so much. I haven't even covered the last decision by the same judge, which said, you know, it was first like a temporary, you know, closure. It hurts the environment. And then it ended up being a permanent one. And they're shipping people out of Alligator Alcatraz. And all of a sudden, appeals court has reversed it. So it's all good. So stay tuned. This judge is getting egg on her face. And then we've got New Brunswick, New Jersey. They released body cam from a deadly police shooting involving a person in a mental health crisis. And we got Suffolk police officers. They fatally shoot a stabbing suspect when he tries to stab the victim again. This guy came out of nowhere in the woods. Feds end. I can't believe this. They're ending a 13-year consent decree in Seattle, of all places, and they're bragging about it. Man with a large hatchet fatally shot by Phoenix officers outside where else but IHOP. You know, it's either got to be an IHOP or a Walmart, right? And then we got cops teams with the woundedblue.org to champion officer wellness, and they're going to be sponsors of the summit, and they're giving a free ride to people that are suffering from like things like PTSD, you know, to the conference for them and their wives. Then we got Port St. Joe officers in the panhandle shooting a woman who was advancing towards an officer with a knife. And then we're going to go to Seattle. Yeah, the same guys that lost the consent decree, now they can use some of that extra money that they have to fund the suit against Glock, because they're suing Glock over illegal switch devices. Sheriff, I'd love to get some input from you on that when we get to that story. Video shows police officers fatally shooting a Dallas lawyer who was armed with a knife. So they throw the word lawyer in there to make him sound, well, you know, upstanding, said he's a lawyer, and they shoot him, right? But they kind of throw in a little side comment that he had just cut his ankle bracelet off before this went down, if that's any clue of what kind of an upstanding citizen he was. So look, we can take these stories out of order too. We have Anthony on the show, so we can have fun with the lawyer one, and the sheriff's, you know, he's stuck in Washington State. So you know we're going to be hitting you up for the Glock, you know, trigger lawsuit coming up. But let's start off with the main topic here. City-journal.org is the source. For Chicago lawyers, exonerations are cash cow. And it's written by a guy named Paul G. Velas. And I found this, you know, I was very disappointed to read this, but I was very intrigued by reading this. So Chicago law firms have found a new way. And look, it's a one-sided story. But Chicago law firms, according to the article, have found a new way to get paid at taxpayers' expense. It's on both sides of the fence, though. They're suing the city for alleged police misconduct. The suits are draining hundreds of millions from Chicago coffers at a time when the city cannot afford to lose a dime. Voters should hold their leaders accountable for enabling the racket. Now, for years, it says that Chicago has led the nation. And I did not know some of the stats, but it's saying that they have led the nation for years in overturning supposedly wrongful convictions. It's resulted in a windfall for law firms. Now, listen to this. Law firms that are suing the city and those that are hired by the city to settle the cases. So both sides of the fence. Since 2000, Chicago has paid out, hope you're sitting down, over $700 million in settlements to criminal defendants who claim that they were framed by police. At least $138 million of that has gone to the city's outside counsel. And Chicago alone was responsible for more than half of the nation's exonerations in 2022. That one city responsible for more than half of the exonerations. Now, the pattern continued this year in 2025. In March, the local jury, or a local jury, awarded $120 million to two guys that served 16 years in prison before the convictions were overturned. And the same day, Chicago City Council approved a $280,000 settlement from an activist who was injured during a violent protest that happened back in 2020 that left 18 officers, wounded. So it sounds like it wasn't a passive protest at all. The big money settlements have prompted some Chicago law firms to specialize in city claims. I have a problem with that. In 2022, and Anthony, maybe you can address the ethical concerns of stuff like what we're reading, if it's true, but in 2022, just one law firm settled cases totaling $42 million of the $117 million that the city paid out for the entire year. So that was close to half. One law firm. Based on standard one-third contingency fee, the lawyers likely reaped a handsome $14 million. City leaders are, according to the article, they're the blame for their calling it a swindle. During her eight-year tenure as Cook County State's Attorney, Kim Fox, we know that name, she prioritized the rights of criminals over law-abiding and law enforcement. It says that her policies effectively encouraged law firms to represent plaintiffs in civil rights suits against the Chicago Police Department, which resulted in mammoth taxpayer-funded settlements. And then it goes on to talk about all the things that Fox did to help encourage this to happen, but I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. But it does talk about certificates of innocence. I did learn some things about that. And even though they're giving certificates of innocence to people they're saying aren't necessarily innocent, but it's helping them file claims against the city and giving them standing, from what I understand, and then getting these big paydays. That's about as far down the rabbit hole as I want to go. We got almost 3 minutes before we take our first commercial break. Attorney Anthony Bandiero, would love to get your input on this.
So there's a lot to unpack there, right? So I'll just kick it off with this, that suing the police is a billion-dollar business. It's big, big money around the United States. Every 7 hours, agencies around the nation pay, collectively $250,000 in settlements. Like every 7 hours, $250,000, so I just kind of did the math on it. So when I go to my classes, sometimes I'll teach the chiefs and sheriffs, I'll bring prop money about $250,000. And I'll say every 7 hours, this is what your fellow agencies are paying out to felons. Right. So the first thing is that the system is broken. It's broken in a few ways. The first way it's broken is these runaway juries, these runaway payments, these settlements. Agencies are not, generally speaking, fighting for fair outcomes in these cases. Now, I think we can agree that if you were sent to prison for a crime you truly did not commit and you were exonerated, would you want to get paid?
Oh, absolutely.
I know I would. And yeah. I would want, I want just compensation. So I have no problem. That's not the issue here. The issue is that number one, like the article said, a lot of the people who are getting exonerated are not really innocent. It's not like there's evidence that, oh my God, DNA exonerated you. A lot of these cases is because let's be frank, the detectives did shoddy work. There's a chain of custody issue on some of the evidence. It's not
technicality,
like
technicality. Yeah,
it's technicalities, and so it's judges. It's DAs that are really, really bent against law enforcement. So it's not necessarily that they're innocent. So, but if you are innocent, I agree, but they're not innocent, but they just, these settlements are so outrageous. Agencies are not standing up for themselves. They're not fighting back. They call them like nuisance fees. And I think that kind of started like 20 years ago, maybe more, but you would just sue agencies and you'd be like, oh, you violated my rights by putting me in handcuffs, right? I mean, these are real cases. And they would say, all right, well, that's, 20 years ago, that's a $5,000 claim because, you shouldn't be put in handcuffs if you didn't deserve it. Now, the one case that I had that I was familiar with, $150,000 for 15 minutes of unlawful handcuffing in a big city. This is out of control. It's out of control.
I agree. Well, hey, that's a great way to start it off.
Where these lawyer fees come from as we come back.
Commercial break, guys. We'll be right back.
My family only cares about one thing, that I come home safe.
At Gall's, every order begins with a promise. Made with purpose. Stitched for support. Backed with pride. Answered by dedicated hands. Delivering the standard you have sworn to uphold. We serve more than the mission. We serve the person. Each piece is engineered to help get our first responders through the shift and back home safe.
Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by attorney Anthony Bandiero from bluethegold.com and also Sheriff Mark Kreider, Walla Walla County in Washington State. Don't hold that against him. And we've been talking about, sometimes it comes out before I have a chance to stop myself. And we've been talking about attorneys on both sides of the fence making a lot of money by suing a police in Chicago. And Anthony was just kind of dumbing that down for us and how lucrative it can be for attorneys to do this. And so go ahead, Anthony, and keep educating us.
Right. So the where I left off is that the system is broken. It's broken that the agencies around the country are contributing to this problem. I mean, Chicago and LA and other cities are actually, they're paying too much money. They're agreeing to these settlements that are just over. I mean, look, the settlement for that guy that, what, 200, how much, 280,000?
280.
Yeah, it was 280. But if you actually, I don't know the story precisely, but what I do know about that story is that guy did not deserve one red cent. He was protesting, rioting, and so forth. And even a council person in Chicago stood up and said, "This is ridiculous. Why are we giving this person any money?" So the first thing is that agencies are contributing to this this issue, and it's out of control. The other thing that people have to understand is that there was a law passed in the 1960s, maybe 67 or so, called Section 1988. Section 1988 is the law that says that if you win a civil rights case against a government agency on the merits, meaning, you know, you were right, they violated your rights, even in a very technical sense, even if you have no real damages, you didn't lose a leg, you didn't lose your life, you didn't lose your time, you know, but your rights are violated. Well, the attorney gets reasonable attorney's fees. And I'm telling you, your audience needs to understand that law, when it was passed in the 60s, was full of good intentions, because a lot of poor people could not afford lawyers to go against their, you know, cops violating their rights and so forth. It was full of good intentions. What's happened, it's morphed into a beast of civil litigation. I call it the nickel and diming effect, because no matter what, let's say I'm a constitutional expert, right? So a civil rights expert. So if I can show a cop violated curtilage, right, the area around your home that you're not supposed to be unless you're invited, in a very technical sense, we have a case where the cop went into a backyard. It wasn't supposed to be in the backyard. The court gave no qualified immunity, right? Because it's a clearly established law. Well, that case ended up being tons of money in legal fees because they won, even though the homeowner didn't suffer any damages. So you have the legal fee issue, which is millions and millions of dollars. You have the incentive to sue agencies because they're handing out checks left and right. And like the article says, the plaintiff gets about a third of that. I'm sorry, the plaintiff's attorney gets a third of that. So that's millions plus attorney's fees. Plus we have the body worn camera, which quite frankly does show, usually exonerates cops, but sometimes it actually hurts us because it does show some violations. Where we're at, Chip, and the sheriff, you know, he works in this, he's in this space right now, is that we have to fix this. We actually have to have real civil rights tort reform because it's out of control.
Now, Anthony, you've got Blue the Gold. You guys try to lower liability for officers and agencies around the country. How bad would it be? You're giving them all the tools. And I know you deal primarily with search and seizure, which is, well, I mean, you... Yeah, well, yeah, but I mean, I guess the point I'm trying to make is just that if you're doing illegal or improper search and seizure, there's a pretty good risk that you can get sued. for it. But if you were telling the guys how to do it the right way, and they were doing it the right way, but then if they were doing payouts for every time there's a frivolous lawsuit, that would kind of suck too.
It does suck. And here's the thing. At Blue to Gold, our intent is, you know, our motto is get it right every time. Just get it right, right? You have to know the law. But I will tell you, and the sheriff will back me on this. I mean, he'll at least give me a head nod. Officers are, and it's true. Listen to me. I'm right. Sheriff, you tell me if I'm lying here. Officers, the vast majority of time, do the right thing, okay? The problem is they really, a lot of them suck at articulation, okay? They just don't know. The reports are bad. Why? Because they're being pushed out the door to go shag more calls, or they just don't understand what the courts are looking for. In other words, we actually, when you look at these videos and so forth, the cop is like, most of the time, the cop is like, yes, they're righteous, but they're getting sued anyway because they don't know how to articulate it. And the attorneys defending these cops don't know how, you know, some of the nuances either. Sheriff?
Yeah, the other thing I kind of weigh in on, being on kind of the management side of this, is it's an equation. So I can tell you that we were sued repeatedly for an ordinance that we had at our fair. And you got to look at the equation. The litigation is going to cost, I'm just going to throw out a number, $100,000, or yep, we can settle for $50,000. So with the risk pool, you look at it and you go, okay, if we settle, which in my opinion, we create bad law then, or bad precedent, but we settle for $50,000, we save the county $50,000. So, it's Anthony knows the ins and outs of the law better than I do.
That's the issue right there. We have to fix that particular issue. We have to, I'm not smart enough to know what the answer is, but that issue right there is one of the biggest issues, because agencies do, and also don't want to take a risk of a runaway jury. You put it in front of a jury and it's like, oh, I don't like the cop, or I don't like this. And, you know, maybe just take a few anti-cop people on the jury and then boom, you know, you have a multi-million dollar lawsuit. But the thing is, something has to be done, because it is out of, the taxpayers are ultimately paying the bill on this. And yes, some people do need to be paid. Absolutely. I've been in those cases. I mean, where like, no, you're paying. It ain't if, it's when. But, but the point is that we have to fix it.
All right. Well, excellent, guys. Anthony, I just typed in a private message to you. Guys, we're going to go to the next one. So if you guys are ready, let's go ahead and hop into the update article here. Now, this is at CBSNews.com. We have an appeals court. It rules that Florida's alligator Alcatraz detention site can stay open. As I said in the beginning of the show, this has been bouncing back and forth. And I'm going to mention the judge's name. Remember this name. Hopefully you won't forget it, but I'm afraid that we're going to hear some more from the judge. 100%. And I'm getting some feedback, guys, so if you guys can kill your microphones. But we've got a federal appeals court on Thursday halted a lower court ruling that required Florida and the Trump administration to dismantle parts of alligator Alcatraz in a controversial immigration detention site in the Everglades. So they're saying it's a controversial, I don't know why, it's saving taxpayers a load of money. They put it up in like no time at all. But the 2-1 ruling by a panel of judges, now listen to this, it's in an appeals court. So the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit, it will effectively allow alligator Alcatraz to stay open while a lawsuit challenging the detention center on what they're saying environmental grounds, even though it was a operational, you know, runway, it works its way through the court system. Now, the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, they started moving detainees out already out of the site last month. And the state has said that alligator Alcatraz will ramp back up if the lower court ruling is overturned. So we're still in the process. Last month, remember the name, U.S. District Judge Kathleen Williams, she ordered the state of Florida and the federal government to immediately stop expanding the facility and to start dismantling fences, lights, generators within 60 days. The judge sided with the environmental groups and the Native American tribe that argued that alligator Alcatraz should have been subject to federal environmental reviews. And on Thursday, though, the panel of appellate judges, they froze that ruling. The court concluded that the state and federal officials are likely to succeed in showing that the site is not subject to the National Environmental Policy Act because they were not receiving federal funds. It goes on to say that Judge Barbara Lagoa, she was in the majority ruling, joined by another female judge, Elizabeth Branch. They were both nominated by Trump's first term. So that paid off already. And the I guess the dissenting judge is Judge Alberto Jordan, and she was an Obama nominee. Now, DHS lauded the ruling, called it a win for the American people on for the rule of law and common sense. Goes on to say that, well, here's a quote from X, you know, Twitter, saying that this lawsuit was never about the environmental impacts of turning a developed airport into a detention facility. It has and will always be about open borders activists and judges trying to keep law enforcement from removing dangerous criminal aliens from our communities. And then Governor Ron DeSantis said on Twitter as well that alligator Alcatraz remains open for business. And again, just to remind people that there were some stats on how much traffic, and I think it was in the thousands of landings and takeoffs from this airport runway. This has not been, I originally thought that it had been abandoned and stuff, but apparently it's been up and operational, and they're saying that there's some kind of environmental impact. They're going to have a hard time selling that. So we'll be watching this, but any commentary or any surprises on this? I'm glad we kind of waited to cover this until the appellate court had actually frozen the decision, allowing them to stay in operation. So, Anthony?
Can you hear me loud and clear?
We can, yes.
Yeah, so I got my headphones in. So my only comment is, when I read that article, it's like we're one federal dollar away from getting that thing shut down, right? The fact that it has federal money. And so, which is unfortunate too, because the Fed should be paying for it. It is their facility, ultimately, right? But I guess at this point, Florida cannot, it cannot accept federal money, because DeSantis would know that if he does it, then it gets shut down. But it's just kind of interesting. It's one federal dollar away from being shut down.
But, you know, you say that, and I totally agree. But, you know, Trump 2.0 is so much different than Trump 1.0. So what I'm saying is that they knew this in advance, and they purposely did not accept any federal funds, and they accurately anticipated moves that the other side was going to make. And they still, the other side still made it, even though there have been no federal funds exchanged. They still played the card anyhow, but I'm so thankful that they weren't dumb enough, you know, to
have previously
accepted them. Yeah.
No, I got to tell you, like, I am so, like, impressed with the Trump administration in that sense, where they actually play chess, you know, in that checkers. And they're winning so much, because they understand the long game here. And somebody is very smart to make that a federal facility.
And another thing that I'm really enjoying watching is, we've all got, the older you get, you can't go through life without having people you don't like, or maybe even enemies, right? But
present company included. Go on.
Yeah. So where I'm going with this is that I hate to see permanent divisions. So let's just take Ron DeSantis and Trump. There was a period in time not long ago where they didn't like each other. And there was some verbal jousting going on national TV in the debate, some really nasty things, size of hands, size of other things, you know, that were going on, in case people have forgotten that. And look where they're at now. And I love my governor. I don't want to lose him, but, you know, you could have had him run for president. You could have him run for a VP slot, even if it's J.D. Vance running for president, or it could be the other way around. I mean, you never know. So I like the fact that people are not in the doghouse forever or for long. And I love to see those things happen. Look at our Kennedy, what his position is. And he was a longtime Democrat. But we're 10 seconds out from doing our next commercial break. So stick with us, guys. We'll be right back. All right, guys, time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And they are committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Device Technology. Now, their flagship product we all know by now is called the Glove. It's helped officers, well, over 250,000 deployments, and guess what? They've had no injuries or deaths. How's that for a stat? They've actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conductive energy weapon, the Glove and Compliant Technologies.com, they have virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and their revolutionary CD3, the hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. Go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip sent you. Again, that's ComplianTechnologies.com, and watch those cool videos. You'll be glad that you did. What were we talking about? We were talking about, Anthony was giving us the update, and that was Alligator Alcatraz. Any final words on that, Anthony?
No, I don't have anything else. I mean, unless you want me to.
we are good. And that was, if you guys are ready to go for a story with a video component, then I think we will make the move to that then. So, and you know, I was looking for, you know, you never know from one day to the next, because we're a news source, and you really don't know from one day to the next what's going to be out there, right? So when I hope for the stories for the next day, I go to This Is Butter, which is one of the best law enforcement video channels out there. And lo and behold, we got some stories with some video components. So this one, it's taken from rumble.com. The name of the channel is This Is Butter. It's talking about the New Brunswick Police Department, but it's a New Jersey AG releases a body cam from a deadly police shooting involving a person in a mental health crisis. So it shows the police fatally shooting a woman with a knife at her New Brunswick, New Jersey home that happened back in August. And the New Jersey Attorney General's office has released a video on this past Wednesday as it's still investigating the incident. So the shooting happened August the 8th at Deborah Terrell's apartment. And the New Brunswick police, they get a 911 call, reports that now she's 68 years old, but the 68-year-old woman is disturbing other residents in her building, and she's going in and out of her apartment with like a huge knife. And so she goes inside of her apartment with the door closed. The officers show up. They start knocking. She opens the door briefly. They exchange a few words, and then she slams the door shut. And then the officers keep trying to engage her numerous times, and they say, "Hey, Deborah, do you mind if we come in?" And then there's a knife that appears at the bottom of the door sliding back and forth, you know, and it's from this like 16-year-old woman with a knife. So she's then seen later open up the door, kind of startles the cops. You can see two cops in the body cam, but there's a number of cops behind them too. She opens the door. She's got the knife in her hand. And so one officer is armed with a taser and the other one's armed with this pepper spray. But I mean, the size of this canister, he must have been loaded for bear, because I mean, the canister was like the size of a freaking 2-liter bottle of Coke, right? So they hit her with both at the same time. She turns her back, she starts to go back into the apartment, and then she turns and she starts advancing on them again, and they fire two shots and they end up killing her, unfortunately. So it's just it's a sad story. But that's the way it goes down. And then if you stick around and you watch the third body cam video, you'll see these cops. They're falling all over. I mean, literally falling all over themselves. They're backing out, trying to run backwards, and they literally are like falling down on the ground, trying to get away from her as she's approaching them with a knife. So I mean, you could argue about if there was exigency in the circumstance to like force the issue because she's by herself in the apartment. But when she did come out with the knife and the cops are falling on the ground, trying to get out of the way in a narrow hallway, They didn't really have much of a choice but to go lethal, at least at that point. But commentary on this video, guys. We've got a little less than 7 minutes before we take our next commercial break. Sheriff, you want to start us off on this one?
Sure. I think your comment is probably a good point. Is do we force this? And when we force it, 9 times out of 10, it leads to a shooting. And then we're the bad guy because we shot somebody that we were defending ourselves against. The question is, do I have the resources to leave somebody posted at that door for the next 6 hours while she's inside the apartment? And then she's coming in and out of the apartment and she's a threat to the neighbors. She's a threat to herself, but we end up shooting her. It's a no-win situation, basically, in my opinion. There's no good remedy to what's going on other than we got to fix the mental health system in the United States. That's the biggest factor in all of these shootings.
No, I agree. I can't argue with you, Anthony.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of cops, you know, think that, they ask me, what's the liability here, right? If we do, I call it the door hanger. You know, you put a door hanger there and say, hey, this is the suicide hotline, and get some help, right? And just and get back in your black and white and take off. Generally speaking, there's no liability because you didn't create that, right? You have to have a special relationship. Special relationship is a term of art, meaning you actually caused that. You, like, let's say she comes out of her apartment and she actually hurt somebody else, that you actually caused that to happen. Here, you would not have caused that. It's a very tough situation. I understand these officers. I mean, they're getting calls. Like, you know, you imagine you're a neighbor and she's doing all this. She's yelling. She has the knife and she's, you know, and then the cops just leave. I mean, I would not be happy with that. However, I do like, I teach my duty to intervene and real world de-escalation class, I talk about that your sheriff is willing to pay overtime for good tactics because good tactics are worth it, you know? And so sitting on it, slowing it down, I don't think they use great tactics here. They should have probably predicted that. They're banging on her door. They want her to come out, and they can probably predict that she's going to come out with that knife. There's no shield. They do have the bear spray, but there's no shield. There's no other, you know, they're not, I don't know. I don't teach tactics, but I can see some better tactics there that could have maybe tried to resolve that situation more peacefully. But it's tough. It's a tough situation.
So let me ask you something, Anthony. So you don't think, and the term officer created jeopardy is relatively a new term in law enforcement, but there have been some courts that have been using this over the last 3 to 5 years. So you don't think that would apply in this case?
No, not at all. Yeah. Even first of all, whether or not officer created jeopardy is a thing, and it probably is a thing, by the way, because at the end of the day, we use totality circumstances. So your actions can contribute to a bad outcome. Right. I mean, if you go into a house unlawfully and you're there and the guy comes out with a gun, he's like, who's in my house? And you shoot him. You created that. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, you weren't even supposed to be there. But here, there's no, you have to, not only when we say officer created jeopardy, you have to foreseeably do something to have that result. Right. And but it has to be you. It has to be you. Like, the officers did not do anything to cause that person to come out with a knife. Well, I'm saying if they left, they would not have caused that person to come out with a knife and threaten other people. That's not them. They didn't do anything to cause that. So no, okay. there would be no liability. I'm not saying there wouldn't be a lawsuit. And that's what the sheriff is talking about too. You know, good nickel point. And diming and just harassing and we call them nuisance suits, right? But they shouldn't pay. They shouldn't pay.
Okay. All right. Anything else, gentlemen? Or if you guys are ready, we got another one. It's a short one, but another story with a video component that we're getting at. This is Butter again. And look, for people listening to the show audibly, your favorite radio station or podcast, please stay loyal to those outlets that are bringing you this good quality content. In return for that, we describe in great detail what's going on so that you don't feel like you're missing out on anything. But if we cover a video that you absolutely have to see, and the one that I'm getting ready to talk about, it may be one of those. All you have to do is go to our Rumble channel, which is called Leo Roundtable, or you can even type in on Rumble, Law Enforcement Talk Show, and these videos will pop up. But we take the very next day at 9 o'clock in the morning, producer Will takes a copy of this live show from the day before. He'll embed every video that we talk about, and pictures of the good guys and bad guys will pop up as we talk about them. It's a great way to watch a show that comes out at 9 o'clock the very next day. And we do that Tuesday through Saturday because our live show is Monday through Friday. So on this one, Suffolk police officers, they fatally shoot a stabbing suspect when he tries to stab a victim again.
Offensive, right? Yeah, we just check his back too. He's got two cuts and the drips in the back.
This dude comes out of nowhere. So we're in New York, Suffolk, New York. So there's a knife wielding guy shot dead while lunging at a stabbing victim, a dude that I'm assuming he had already stabbed. Suffolk police officers are there. There may have been some medics there applying, some first aid to this guy. There's a lot of chaos, and it happened. I mean, the cop that took out the bad guy, I was impressed with how quickly he was able to break leather and get rounds on target. So officers from the 6th precinct are called at 8:48 in the morning for a disturbance call and involving a weapon. And so at the scene, the officers, they find a 44-year-old guy that's been stabbed in the neck. So they're there, they're treating the victim. In the backdrop, you can see there's a wooded area and you got cops all the way around it. And they're just like kind of like BS and talk and treating this guy. And it's pretty a benign situation. And the guy as the victim's being treated, we got a bad guy with four names, right? So he's a really bad guy. Emerson Yon Ordonez Venegas, 29 years old. Don't ask me to say that again. Sheriff's already laughing at me. He comes out of the wooded area when all these cops are distracted. He walks by one cop. He's got the knife raised over his head. And where's he going? He's going at the victim that's already got the stab wound in his neck that the cops are treating, trying to keep him from bleeding out and stuff. And he's yelling, charging at the wounded dude. And so, yeah, you've got one cop. He breaks leather, and right as the guy is coming right over the victim, he does that double tap, hits him, and they pronounce the dude dead. And they say this bad guy was homeless, according to police. And then a couple officers, you know, had a hearing issue after they weren't even in a closed area. It was a wooded area, but they had some kind of hearing issue or hearing loss, and they had to go to the hospital for that. We've only got 22 seconds, so I'm really not giving you guys any time for decent commentary. So let's do those. Let's go to the commercial break, and we'll come back and cover this. But it is a wild video. We'll be right back. All right, guys, we're talking about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And, you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and also disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending the live seminar at GunLearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Afianko. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, if you have your own agency, the founder, Dana Kelly, has got a deal for you. You can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. You can go to GunLearn.com to get more information. And again, that is at GunLearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the Law Enforcement Talk Show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. And we are joined by attorney Anthony Bandiero and also Sheriff Mark Kreider. And I just got done talking about a use of force. We've got the cops that are attending to a guy, a victim that's been stabbed in the neck, and they're pretty much just chill and talking amongst each other. And then I'm assuming, they don't say in the article, but I'm assuming it's the stabber, the dude that stabbed the victim in the neck in the first place, emerges from the woods. He's homeless, raises the knife over his head, and he makes a beeline charge through a line, a circle of cops, going right through the middle, and he's knife in his hand over his head, going right for the guy that he's already stabbed in the neck. I guess he didn't do the job good enough. He's trying to finish the job. And you got one sharp cop that sees the guy come and breaks leather, puts two rounds in him, and he kills the dude before he can get to the victim. I mean, how bad would that be? Cops are there because we have a responsibility to protect the people in our custody. I mean, how bad would that be? They're around this dude, and then the bad guy that originally stabbed him comes in and finishes him off right in front of the cops. That wouldn't have been worked out too well. But commentary on this guy's a pretty wild video to watch.
Go ahead, Sheriff.
You guys, go ahead. Sheriff?
I was just going to comment. It goes right back to what's happening around the country today. Is your head's got to be on a 360-degree swivel, and you got to be ready 100% of the time. We've had cops ambushed writing reports. We've had cops ambushed while they're eating lunch. Goes right back to that. Great situational awareness. Gets the rounds out. I think he may have gotten off four shots, but he stopped the threat. That's the important thing.
Agreed. Anthony?
Nothing. That's actually perfect.
We're good.
Next.
All right. See, it kind of sucks having people on the show that are so good that, you know, like the Sheriff Mark Kreider talks, and then there's nothing else to say for anybody else on the show. You know, I mean, maybe we may have to get to the point where we just are doing shows with just like one guest, you know, the sheriff, you know, I mean, you know, anyhow, we've got a Fox 13 Seattle.com. Seattle sues Glock over illegal switch devices. I'm going to go through this quickly. We have the city attorney, Ann Davison, is suing the gun manufacturer Glock over switches, illegal modification devices that can turn handguns into machine guns. That's nothing new. The civil lawsuit accuses Glock of knowingly making, marketing, and selling handguns that can be converted to fire automatically, arguing that these switches not only pose a public safety risk, but they also put first responders and law enforcement in danger. So they say they're doing it to help out law enforcement. In the lawsuit, Davison also asked the court to require Glock to change its handguns so they cannot, I don't even know that you can prevent a handgun from being modified, but so that it cannot be modified to fire automatically with the easy application of a switch. And unlike its competitors who choose to use a different, safer standard, according to the article at least, Glock chooses to prioritize profits over public safety. This is some kind of characterization made by the city attorney Davison. She says, I'm bringing this litigation because the massive increase in gun violence caused by converted Glocks, which I question, by using the civil remedy and continuing to use criminal prosecution community-wide, we will fight gun violence both upstream and downstream, is what she's saying. Three local retailers, including Bullseye Indoor Range, Pantel Tactical, and Rainer Arms, it's time to leave the state, guys, are also named in the lawsuit. So they're going after these poor folks. They're contributing to the public nuisance under a state statute that was enacted as recently as 2023, creating a public nuisance. And sadly, the switches are very prevalent, is what she's saying. Many can be produced with a 3D printer, but they're going after these local businesses. And here's the kicker. Davidson, the city attorney, says that modified Glocks have been used in dozens of crimes in Seattle, not hundreds, not thousands. It doesn't even say that they were even fired or that anyone was injured or killed, just that they have been used dozens of times. Anyhow, that's where we're at. Anthony.
All right, I want to make 3 points. Number one, I am starting a new business based on this lawsuit. It's called the Glock Chastity Belt. It's going to go on the Glock, and you cannot put anything into the rear. Number two, I'm just saying.
Can he say it's that a rear sear on radio? Okay.
Are you thinking about something else? Okay. So the number two chip.
The FCC is lighting up my phone now, but that's okay. Go ahead. Keep talking.
They should. But look, this is because it's genius. The Glock chastity belt is a genius invention. It's going to prevent Glock switches being inserted. I will stop there. And the next thing I want to tell you is that AR-15s have been easily converted to full auto machine guns since the day they were invented. It's called the Lightning Link. You actually don't even have to put a third pinhole in it. A Lightning Link, you can actually buy registered Lightning Links on GunBroker. They're very expensive, $20,000, whatever. But it's a drop-in. It actually makes the AR-15 full auto. Where are those lawsuits, right? So any gun can be converted, not any gun, but most guns can be converted to full auto. And the last thing is this lawsuit is dead. It should be dead on arrival because of PLCA, which is the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act, which the U.S. Supreme Court just used to shut down Mexico to sue Smith & Wesson. So it's very hard to sue gun companies when for the negligent or unlawful use of firearms. And that's what CL is trying to do. So the Supreme Court, again, that Supreme Court against Mexico is very, very good for Glock and those Seattle gun companies.
Wow. You covered that pretty well.
Thank you. That's what I do, my friend.
Sheriff, we got almost 4 minutes, Sheriff.
I just want to say, thank God we have people like this in our government that are willing to go out on a limb and really try and bite crime right where it starts. Glock is contributing to crime about as much as my desk is contributing to crime. It's about time that Seattle start looking at criminals and enforcing the laws that we have on the books and going after criminals. I'm sick and tired of my tax dollars being spent with these frivolous lawsuits by government entities that have no impact whatsoever on crime.
Thank you. Yeah, and we're going to get all those Glocks off the market anyhow.
I can tell you in my 22 years as an FBI agent and my 8 years as a sheriff, I have never encountered a full auto Glock that I've recovered on the street.
Wow. You're prior FBI and you're a Washington state sheriff. Wow. Yeah. Hey, let me ask you, it's a curiosity thing before we go to the consent decree in Seattle. Have either of you ever shot a Glock 18, a full auto? Yeah. Sheriff has?
I haven't.
And I forgot, because if Anthony has, there may be questions over how did you legally do that. So I understand the statute of limitations and all that stuff, Anthony. So I probably shouldn't have done this in a public setting. But
5 years. Just give me 5 years. give me 3 years and I can talk about it.
Okay. All right. Were you impressed? I mean, obviously, the accuracy on something like that, I would much rather have a semi. But
I think a Glock machine gun is actually the safest gun in the world because you don't hit anything.
You don't hit anything. Yeah, I get it. I get it. Fox13Seattle.com. Feds, they end the 13 years of Seattle Police Department oversight. They've ended the consent decree. Just real quick, it says that they emerged from a 13-year federal oversight after a U.S. District Judge ruled the department has successfully completed the requirements of a consent decree. This is rare. Judge James Robert ruled on Wednesday that the Seattle Police Department has become a model for reform. Wow, I'm surprised to see that. The Justice Department Civil Rights Division, the U.S. Attorney's Office of the Western District of Washington, started an investigation to the Seattle Police back in 2011. A 2012 consent decree was the result of that, and because they had engaged in a pattern or practice of unnecessary or excessive force. So they're off the hook now, Sheriff.
I'm a little disappointed. I was looking at that for my follow-on retirement job to be the monitor for that law. but good for them. These consent decrees are ridiculous. There's no end to them. I'm shocked that this ended. I think if you look at Phoenix, how long has Phoenix been under a consent decree? It's absolutely ridiculous, and it's costing the taxpayers millions of dollars. I believe the Seattle consent decree cost $200 million.
You know, I was looking for the figure in the article. It wasn't there. I'm glad you threw that in there because, yeah, people don't understand the amount of money they make. And then these monitors that can live across the country, they could be in Florida, and it's just a cash cow. And they typically don't want to shut it off, and which makes complete sense because they're making millions, and why would they? So, wow.
Yeah, typically the main monitor is making somewhere between $350,000 and $500,000 a year. I believe the monitor for the Seattle consent decree lived in Chicago.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. Hey, another fantastic show, attorney Anthony Bandero with Blue the Gold at bluethegold.com. Guys, check them out to lower your liability for both your agency and the officers. You will learn so much. Bluethegold.org. Also, Sheriff Mark Cryer, thank you so much for being on the show. Appreciate it. I do want to mention the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Lieutenant Randy Sutton's 501c3 that's helping cops out in the world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD. I support them monthly. I encourage you guys to check them out as well because I know and I don't have to worry about them embarrassing me like with some other organizations like BLM that people have found out adversely from. So anyhow, They're an excellent company. But thanks to Gauls.com, ComplianceTechnologies.com, GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.life, SafeGuardRecruiting.com, and TubeBells.com. Don't forget the Gauls discount code Radio15. They get 15% off. We'll see you guys back Monday, 12 noon Eastern.